For the first time on The Morning Show, we have Connecticut's House Speaker here. Matt Ritter joins the show, Speaker of the House, and certainly has been representing the first district in Connecticut in the Democratic Party. Matt Ritter, welcome to WACC, and thank you so much for your time.
It's my pleasure, Melissa. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much. I wanted to honestly get a better understanding of what happened last week. We know there was a special session, and I shared with my listeners, I tried to keep them very much in the loop of what's going on with local politics over national, because I think local is really way more pertinent to the everyday Connecticut resident over what's going on nationally. And so when we found out from the governor, he did kind of a breakdown and sent out a news release of some of the things that are going to be discussed during this special session. When I was looking at it, all of these things were really pretty unrelated, other than the fact that they did not have a conclusion during the regular session, and they had these kind of time stamps that were coming up very soon. But they were all kind of unrelated items. And what I was curious about first and foremost was, how were they decided on? How were these 7 or 8 items chosen to be discussed during the special session?
Yeah, that's probably the hardest thing about a special session is picking the items, selecting the items you'll vote on. But you mentioned it. I think in many cases, there was a timeliness issue, the car tax being the single biggest problem. In the city of Hartford, if we had not fixed the car tax, if you are a plumber or an electrician and you owned commercial vehicles, your car taxes would have gone up 100%. So that's timely, right? We had to do that by June 30th. We had an issue with COVID taxation that had to be done. So there were a couple things like that. We're recruiting some banks to Stamford, we hope, Fairfield County area, where a statutory change we think may help us get selected over another state. But it is admittedly very difficult. That's why speakers and Senate presidents and governors don't particularly like special sessions.
Now, it's interesting. I was curious who decided on it, though. Like, when I would imagine that there's either a committee or something. I don't know how it all works. Obviously, I'm not a politician. But how is it decided on what was going to be chosen, and also who was going to craft the legislation?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it comes down to the governor, myself, and the Senate president, as well as the majority leaders in the two chambers, and the Republicans, right? I mean, every bill that we called and we're going to vote on, I called my counterpart on the Republican side, Vinnie Candelora, and we walked through it. So, you know, look, you're talking to your committee chairs to get information from them about what bills they think are timely. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's going to be decided by leadership.
Okay, because that's interesting. So what you were saying, and I want to just make sure I'm not putting words in your mouth, Republicans were also included on crafting this legislation?
Well, in the House, it was bipartisan, right? We had Democrats, yes, Democrats, no. We had Republicans, yes, and Republicans, no. I'm not saying that if the Republicans were in control, they would have called exactly the same bills. But we always work with the Republicans about bills that we're going to call in special session. And there were a couple bills that were removed at the request of House Republicans. Yeah. Absolutely. We work very well together. Yeah.
The reason I ask, and again, we have the Speaker of the House here in Connecticut, Matt Ritter, and we're glad to get this insight. You know, when we were, you know, finding out a little bit about this bill, especially after the Senate, now it was super different. Interestingly enough, the Senate was a totally different vote than what we saw in the House. I mean, the Senate, yeah, every Republican opposed it, and the Democrats all were for it, which was very different, as you just mentioned, in the House. But I was curious, when we look at this, one thing that was brought to my attention by some of the senators was that there was an amendment made, or there was one pitched, I should say, to have all of these items in separate bills instead of putting it all into one big piece of legislation. And again, I know you're with the House, but why do you think that was not an option? Why, you know, is it the fact that we just have a very quick turnaround time? Because again, they're not really related items at all.
Yeah, it's not unusual to do one bill. Again, it wasn't a problem in the House. There was no motion to divide the question. And again, we had people voting for it and against it on both sides. I can't speak to upstairs. So I would just tell you that, yes, in a perfect world, you can vote on every bill individually. But the same people complaining this year about a bill, well, next year when there's a week to go in session, they're going to want their bill in a larger package. And so sometimes it works for you. Sometimes it works against you. But normally in special sessions, you will only vote on one bill. Not always, but it's pretty common, especially when the items, at least downstairs, are going to have support from both parties.
It's also, I have to be honest, Matt, I'm confused a little bit on some of the items in here, and so I wanted to get some clarification. You know, the car tax, obviously, as you just mentioned, you know, Hartford, for example, you know, is the example that you gave. And when I was speaking to senators, you know, about this last week, before the governor had signed it into law, I had said, all right, then give me an example. Help me to understand this. Like, if I live in Bridgeport, is this saving me a bunch of money? And I couldn't really get a concrete answer, but I was then told it's really going to be impacting, for example, like Fairfield County towns. But this is really actually great for cities like a Hartford, a Bridgeport, a New Haven, for example. Is that the case?
No, it's not really accurate. What I would say best describe it is this. It depends on your mill rate, okay? The state has a cap on mill rates of 32. That is about 32.4. If you're a Fairfield County town, in many cases, your mill rate is below 32, and this bill had really no impact on you. Are there a couple make and models of cars that could see a couple percentage increase or decrease? Yes. But the reality is where this really was an impact is on commercial vehicles that we classify as residential. So I know that's complicated, but the example I will give you is if we had not changed the law, if you are an electrician who lives in Hamden, New Britain, Bridgeport, Hartford, high mill rate towns where that mill rate is way above 32, mill rates in the 50s and 60s and high 40s, your car would have gone from being taxed at 32 to whatever the mill rate is in that town. Could be 47, could be 54. That was the main impetus behind this, and that was the fix. It was admittedly an error that was made a couple years ago. And we fixed it in the House with a week to go. The Senate amended it the last night so it didn't pass. But that's really what this did. It really will have almost no impact on anybody in a low mill rate town, just the high mill rate towns.
Why even keep the car tax? Wasn't that supposed to be temporary?
Well, it hasn't been temporary for a long time. I don't think anybody likes the car tax, but if you ask the towns, where would they make up the revenue? So the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities and the Connecticut Council of Small Towns, Republicans and Democrats, and I would remind you that Republicans control two-thirds of the towns in our state. There has never been a plan that anybody can agree on to get rid of the motor vehicle tax. How do you make up the revenue? You'd have to either have the state reimburse the towns for all that money, which we probably can't afford, or number two, you'd have to raise the residential mill rate much higher. And that's a difficult option for some people. So at the end of the day, we'd all love to get rid of it. I just have never seen a plan under Governor Rell, Governor Rowland, Governor Malloy or Governor Lamont or any speaker that could ever pay for the revenue loss to the municipalities. And that would, if you asked a Republican first selectman or a Democratic first selectman, they'd give you the same response.
When we found out about a special session happening last week from the governor, in fact, it was in a presser on June 22nd, he said that they were going to have a two-day special session and they were going to be addressing several topics. And he outlined them in this press release, which I shared with you here on the air. And we found out that there was a meeting for the Senate and then the next day a meeting for the House. And it passed through both chambers, and the governor has since signed it. What's interesting is I reached out, as I always do, for those of you who listen to the show frequently, reached out to both sides of the aisle on this. We reached out to Senator Bob Duff, who is right here representing Norwalk and our surrounding communities, as well as the Senate Majority Leader. We reached out to Senator Looney, Governor Lamont, who comes on the show pretty frequently. And we also reached out to the Speaker of the House. And Matt Ritter is here, and we're talking about this massive piece of legislation. Matt, I want to play something for you really quickly, because the other part of this bill that has gotten a lot of attention and, again, a lot of confusion for folks is the part of the bill which looks at South Central Connecticut Regional Water Authority, permitting the authority to now acquire water companies outside of its current service area, which we found out later was Aquarion. Senator Tony Huang, who was very outraged about this, shared on the show his take on why this was not good policy.
It really reeks of shady insider politics, but ultimately an abuse and an arrogance of power. Hey, this is a great idea. This is a good deal. But the reality is, it's going to affect ratepayers in the Aquarion service area. This is an end run that's going to ultimately cost the consumer additional cost.
And basically, he was explaining in that, you know, how Pura, you know, with Eversource in charge of Aquarion right now, Pura basically holds Eversource accountable for whenever they want to, you know, increase their pricing and anything like that. And basically by allowing this to be sold to a private entity, PURA is taken out of the equation. Is there any truth to what the senator just shared now that this has been signed into law?
Yeah, I mean, Tony must have a tough election. I like Tony, but it must be tough election season because I was a little over the top. What I would say is this, right, is at the end of the day, we don't know who is going to acquire Aquarian. What the bill allowed for is for this authority to bid on it. There will be two bidders on it, Connecticut Water Company, which is a private entity, or the Regional Water Authority, which you mentioned, which is a public quasi-public instrumentality. So the senator is correct. If it is a private company that owns it, Aquarian or Connecticut Water Company, PURA would regulate the rates. Do you know who regulates the rates if the quasi-public agency buys it, if the Regional Water Authority? Do you know who sets those rates?
I don't.
The mayors and the first selectmen of the member towns. There are the board members. The board members of that quasi-public agency are the people who are elected to represent their towns in that agency or some other appointment. So the question becomes, I don't know who will win the bid. This hasn't even gone to bid yet. Now you've gone from one bidder to potentially two bidders, right, assuming these two companies bid. Some people would argue that PURA is a better oversight. Okay, some people would say that. I don't know if that's true. And again, Republicans voted for this bill in the House. If the other agency wins, the rates are set by their board, which is elected officials. So in our caucus, some people said, boy, I'd rather have my mayor or first select woman in charge of that than PURA. So again, the rhetoric was hot, it was heated, but a rational step back and looking at the issues, I think we can all agree reasonable people might disagree on who's a better overseer of rates.
And I just want to, again, sort of reiterate, and I do know that this has actually been really highlighted on the show because we've made it a real point to, again, you know, I have to say, Mr. Rivera, I've really tried to focus since taking over the show 5 years ago on the importance of local elections. I want our listeners to go to the polls, and I want them to focus on our first selectmen, our mayors, our board of education, all the way up to our senators and our governor and everybody who's representing Connecticut. Because to me, I think, you know, you the guys and gals who are up in Hartford and in our towns and cities, they're really the ones who are making things happen for our schools, our neighborhoods, our roads, our taxes, all of that. So it's been my focus. But I have to say, I continue to hear that there's a supermajority that does push power and does push their agendas. And this is not the first time I've heard about this kind of a bill getting passed through. And so I wasn't sure if, regardless of the election season that's coming up, you know, is there any truth to what the senator just said, which is, again, this like arrogance that I have heard about for a few years now since really looking at the Connecticut politics.
Yeah, I can only counter that with I've been speaker for 4 years, and three of those 4 years we passed bipartisan budgets. And the bill you're referring to, again, I can't say this enough, we had as many Republican no's as Democratic no's. We had plenty of Republican votes downstairs. I worked very closely with the Republican side. It's the opposite of arrogance. I mean, I can't speak to other chambers or people's personal feelings of their own interactions. But if you've ever come to the House of Representatives for a day, if anyone goes and looks at it and looks at how we conduct our business, I think you'd be blown away. It's the opposite of Washington. It's the opposite of arrogance. It has nothing to do with abuse of power. And yes, I have 98 votes. So we could abuse that power. We don't. Do you know how many debates we've had in the last 2 years go past midnight? One. We go home at a good time. We don't do business at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's a very different atmosphere. And so I would encourage people, if you're one of these people who thinks politics stinks and everybody's arrogant, doesn't listen to each other, you've never spent a day in the Connecticut House of Representatives. It's the exact opposite of that.
I wonder if it's different. Do you feel like the House and the Senate are very different? Because I will say,
yeah.
Right. And the reason I say that, Matt Ritter, is because I mostly hear from senators. I mostly hear from Senate, and I don't think it's a surprise because this is not the first time I've reached out about things and I have been, quite frankly, blown off by Democratic senators. And you know, this is a show where Senator Duff used to come on pretty frequently. He will not come on. But I do have people like Senator Maroney who will come on the show. So it's not like we don't have them. But I do find that the House Democrats and House Republicans are very open to talking about the issues. However, that is not the case with the Senate in Connecticut, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get along very well with all the senators, too. I get along very well with Bob and James and Republicans, too, and Steve Harding. And, you know, I talked to Steve last week. I mean, we get along well. I can't speak to what the difference is, and I don't know that there are probably some differences and some similarities. But I just want to let people know that, you know, at the end of the day, a broad brush is an easy thing to do when you're sort of look at politics. But, you know, when you really get to the granular level, it's important to really consider, you know, all the factors that go into special sessions and things like that. And I can only tell you that I do agree that it is difficult at times when you have a supermajority and control all three chambers. There is pressure to ram things through. I get yelled at by Democrats for not cutting off debate or for not, you know, pushing stuff through regardless of what the Republicans think. So, look, as Speaker, you're going to get criticized by both sides. But I can tell you that the Connecticut General Assembly operates by and large very, very different from Washington, D.C. And I'm quite proud of that. It's a different culture. But that culture can always go away. And to your point, the more people have to talk about things and, you know, face public scrutiny and questioning, the more likely we are to remain where we are today than fall into the trap of Washington.
Connecticut House Speaker Matt Ritter, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And I do hope you'll come back on again because I think you have great insight and would love to be able to have you on as a guest in the future.
I really enjoyed it. Happy July 4th, everybody. I'd be glad to come back on later.
Thank you. You too. Again, House Speaker Matt Ritter right here in the state of Connecticut on WICC.